Translation. He is well decorated with an ornamental wreath about his waist and rings studded with valuable jewels on his fingers. His leglets, his bangles, his oiled hair, curling with a bluish tint, and his beautiful smiling face are all very pleasing. So, translation responsibly. He is well decorated with an ornamental wreath about his waist and rings studded with valuable jewels on his fingers. His leglets, his bangles, his oiled hair, curling with a bluish tint, and his beautiful smiling face are all very pleasing. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the most beautiful person amongst all others. And Srila Shukadev Goswami describes every part of his transcendental beauty, one after another, in order to teach the impersonalist that the Personality of Godhead is not an imagination by the devotee for facility of worship, but is the Supreme Person in fact and figure. The impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth is but his radiation, as the sun rays are but the radiations from the sun. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Palitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So continuing on, these verses are describing the transcendental beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And here the Paramatma is being referred to. So the beauty of the Paramatma is being described, starting from his feet and going up. So when we take darshan of the Lord, we always start from the lotus feet of the Lord and we progress our way upwards. It is said that one should not look straight at the face of the Lord or different parts of the body of the Lord, but one should begin from the lotus feet and progress upwards. So even when we heard the description of the Virat Rupa, the universal form, it started with the feet as the lower planets, and then we progress all the way up to the sun and the moon, which are the eyes of the Lord. So here it's been described that Krishna, or Prabhupada in the purport, explains that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the most beautiful person amongst all others. So, and here Prabhupada is obviously referring to Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's this book, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the 10th canto is all about the description of the pastimes of Krishna and his transcendental beauty. So then Prabhupada summarized the 10th canto as the Krishna book, and he titled it Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is mentioned, it refers to Krishna. So Krishna is the most beautiful personality of all personalities. So in this world also there is beauty, and the spiritual world is also full of beauty, and all the expansions of the Lord are very beautiful persons. And of the 64 qualities of Godhead, the very first quality is the beauty of the Lord. So all the expansions of Krishna are very beautiful. All the personal expansions of Krishna, the Vibhinamshas, they are very beautiful. It's not that Narayan, Vishnu, Sankarshan, Pradyumna and so many other incarnations are not beautiful. They are very beautiful. So we can read descriptions in the Srimad Bhagavatam where various devotees, by meditating or prayers, they've had the darshan of the Lord and they are stunned by the beauty of the Supreme Lord. But Krishna's beauty is in a different category. So there are four qualities which make Krishna very special, which none of the other incarnations of the Lord possess those four qualities. So one of them is Krishna's exquisite beauty. So there's one quality is that Krishna is the performer of wonderful pastimes. So the other expansions of Godhead also perform pastimes, but Krishna's pastimes are very unique. And then Krishna is surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love of Godhead. And Krishna can attract all living entities all over the universe by playing on his lotus flute, on his flute. So others can also play a flute, they can also attract. But Krishna's flute playing is in a different category. And then the last quality is he has a wonderful excellence of beauty which cannot be rivaled anywhere in the creation. So here, as Prabhupada mentions, that he is the most beautiful person amongst all others. So the Supreme Lord has two kinds of expansions, the Vibhinamshas and the Amshas. So there's the Jivas and the personal expansion. So amongst all of them, Krishna's beauty is the topmost. And even Uddhava, in the third canto, second chapter, first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhava told Vidura that, he says, "My dear sir, Krishna's form is the most wonderful when he appeared on this planet and when he exhibited the potency of his internal energy." So he basically says that his beauty is so amazing, his personal beauty is so great, that Krishna doesn't have to wear ornaments to make himself look beautiful. In fact, it's the other way around, Uddhava told Vidura, that by Krishna's wearing ornaments, the ornaments get beautified. Whereas we see with us, we wear various ornaments in order to look beautiful, in order to look attractive. So we, you know, we have, we maybe some people wear a tie, so that's kind of an ornament to look more attractive. Or, you know, a girdle or bangles, or these days even it's becoming a fashion, a lot of people are wearing beads. So of course we started it. So we are the trendsetters. So people wear ornaments in order to look beautiful. You know, people wear jewelry. But the whole idea is that Krishna, when he wears ornaments, the ornaments look more look beautiful. So Krishna's beauty is independent of the ornaments he wears. And in fact, in Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't wear so many ornaments like they wear in Mathura and Dwarka. So he's in a different mood over there. So Krishna in Vrindavan, he beautifies himself by, or he wears, you know, forest flowers or garlands made out of flowers like that. So he decorates himself with very natural natural things. So that's Krishna's beauty. So Krishna's beauty is very exquisite. And then in the 10th canto, the 29th chapter, verse 40, the gopis, they address Krishna. And they say that, although our attitude toward you, Krishna, resembles loving affairs with a paramour, we cannot but wonder at how no woman can maintain a chastity upon hearing the vibration of your flute. And then further on they mention that not only women, but even strong-hearted men are attracted by the vibration of your flute and by your beauty. So it's not that by Krishna's beauty only the women are attracted, but all living entities are attracted by Krishna's beauty. So that's the beauty of the Supreme Lord. And then further on they say that even the cows, the deer, the birds, the trees, and everyone, they're enchanted by the fascinating beauty of your person and by your wonderful flute playing. So we see that everyone, they are attracted by Krishna's wonderful bodily features or his beauty. And of course Krishna's beauty cannot be compared to anything material in this world. Nothing in this world can compare to Krishna's beauty. But in the Shastras, just in order to make us appreciate Krishna's beauty, some aspects of the material creation are taken and they're compared to the Supreme Lord, so that we can have a glimpse of the beauty of the Lord. We can begin to appreciate. So the face of the Lord is compared to the moon. And Krishna's thighs are compared to the trunk of an elephant. Is that right? To the trunks of an elephant. And Krishna's arms are compared to two pillars, are compared to a pillar. So in this way we can begin to appreciate Krishna's beauty, because all we know in the material world is simply matter, and we have seen material things from time immemorial. So to make us appreciate Krishna's beauty, these things are used. So we can begin. So there we also hear how the gopis, they are attracted by Krishna's beauty, and not only them but all living entities. But even we see that even the demons are attracted by Krishna's beauty. So when Krishna, he went to punish Kaliya. So when Kaliya poisoned the lake, the river Yamuna, and Kaliya was residing in a lake within the Yamuna. And when all the cows and they went there to drink water, they all died. And not only that, but all the vegetation around the river also died because of the poisonous fumes. And the birds flying, they also crashed, they died. So the poison was so strong. So then Krishna went there, and Krishna climbed on the Kadamba tree, And the Acharya said that by his touch, the Kadamba tree was alive. Or some Acharya say, because Garuda knew Krishna will come, so he sprinkled some nectar on that tree, so it's alive. So anyhow, Krishna climbed the Kadamba tree, and he fastened his belt, and he just, you know, slapped his arms, and then he dove in the river Yamuna. And when he dove, there was such a big splash, as if something huge, or something very huge and heavy, fell in the water. And the water, there was like a huge, big splash. And then Kaliya could figure out that somewhere someone is in here, and someone is in here to challenge me. So then Kaliya came out. And when Kaliya saw Krishna, he appreciated Krishna's beauty. He was for a moment, he was struck by Krishna's beauty. So there it said that, in the Krishna book it says that Kaliya saw that Krishna was indeed worth seeing because his beauty, his body was so beautiful and delicate. Its color resembled that of a cloud and his feet resembled lotus flowers. And Krishna was decorated with Sri Vatsa, jewels and yellow garments. He was smiling with a beautiful face and playing in the river Yamuna with great strength. So when Kaliya saw Krishna, he was struck and he was actually appreciating the Lord's beauty. But then the next moment, he decided to kill Krishna. And not only Kaliya, but also we see Kalayavana later on in the 10th canto. So as we have heard that Krishna, he defeated Jarasandha 17 times. And the 18th time again, Jarasandha was preparing his army and he was preparing to attack Mathura. So Krishna was there with Balaram and all the residents. And at that same time, Kalayavana, who was a very formidable warrior, he also decided to attack Mathura. In fact, he was encouraged by Narad Muni. So he was encouraged by Narad Muni to go and attack Mathura. So there was an interesting situation created. So Jarasandha was preparing to attack, and there Kalayavana, I think it's mentioned, he had 30 million soldiers. Some huge number. So he came from the south to attack Mathura. So it was quite a tense moment. There's Jarasandha, there's Kalayavana, and Krishna knew that Jarasandha would take advantage of this situation. So then Krishna, he thought what to do, and time is running short. So then Krishna decided to create a fort in Dwarka. So then he assigned Vishwakarma to construct this fort, and then everyone was transferred over there in a moment. So they were all transferred there, and Balaram was the chief. So then Krishna just came out of Mathura, and when Kalayavana, he saw Krishna, again he was struck by Krishna's beauty. So there it said that when Krishna came out of the city, Kalayavana, who had never seen Krishna before, saw him to be extraordinarily beautiful. So he also appreciated Krishna's beauty. He saw him to be extraordinarily beautiful, dressed in yellow garments. And it said that passing through Kalayavana's assembly of soldiers, Krishna appeared like the moon in the sky, passing through the assembled clouds. So Kalayavana was fortunate enough to see the lines of Sri Vatsa, a particular impression on the chest of Sri Krishna. And then Kalayavana also saw the Kaushubha jewel he was wearing. And it said that Kalayavana, however, he saw him in his Vishnu form. He saw Krishna in his Vishnu form, so with four arms. But nonetheless, he appreciated the beauty of the Lord. And then again, he also attacked the Lord. So we see that Krishna's beauty is appreciated not only by the pure devotees, but even by the demons. They appreciate Krishna's beauty. And here in the purport, Prabhupada says that Srila Shukadeva Goswami is describing every part of the transcendental beauty of the Lord just to convince the impersonalists who think that the Lord does not have a form. So the Supreme Lord descends in this material creation basically to convince the living entities to come back to Godhead and to manifest His form. So, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, He comes to the material world once in a day of Brahma to establish religious principles wherever there is a decline in religious principles and wherever irreligion is flourishing. And Krishna also comes to manifest his personal form to His devotees for their pleasure, and also to convince non-devotees that yes, the Supreme Lord has a form, the Supreme Lord is not impersonal. So every one of us in the material world, because we are conditioned by the three modes of nature, we have an impersonal conception of the Supreme Lord. So Krishna manifests Himself to convince us of His personal aspect. So forgetting Krishna's form, we are identified with our own form, and our form is the main thing in this world for us. So due to identification with the body and because of enviousness of the Supreme Lord's form, the conditioned soul takes their own form very, very seriously. So we are all meant to worship the form of the Supreme Lord because we are part and parcel of Krishna. We are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. So Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas, and even Krishna Himself, He manifests as the deity so that we can appreciate His form and worship Him. So in the material world, because we have an impersonal conception and we are very strong, we are identifying with the body very strongly, it's difficult to conceive of the form of the Supreme Lord and what to speak of worshipping Him. So Krishna, very mercifully, one of the expansions of the Supreme Lord is the Arsha, is the Arsha Vigraha. So Krishna manifests as the Arsha Vigraha just to give us the facility to worship Him, to render service unto Him. So that's why Krishna appears as the Arsha Vigraha. And the pure devotees, they invoke the presence of the Lord in the deity. So the deity resembles matter, but it is not matter. It resembles matter because it looks like, you know, it's made out of earth, water, fire, air, ether, material elements basically. But because everything is the energy of Krishna, so Krishna can manifest Himself through the material energy. And then it is spiritual, it's non-different from Krishna. So here we have Sri Sri Radha Balabha, Gaunitai and Jagannath Baladev Subhadra, who have very kindly manifested to accept our service. So they give us a wonderful opportunity to serve them by cooking for them, by dressing them, and by doing so many other services for their pleasure. So in the material world, everyone is imitating Krishna's form. So the material world is based on envy. So in the material world, everyone wants a form like God. So God's form is Sachit Ananda, eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge. And Krishna's form is beautiful. Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Ananta Rupam Adyam Purana Purusham Navayovanam Cha. So Krishna's form is ever youthful. It's ever fresh. Krishna's form does not decay. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Ajopi San Avayatma Bhutanam Ishwaropi San. Krishna does not take birth in this material world. He is unborn. and he appears by his internal potency. So Krishna's form is not subject to decay by the influence of time. So Krishna's form is not subject to the three modes of nature and time, whereas our form is subject to the influence of time, and therefore there are the six transformations of the body, ending with death. But Krishna's form is not like that. So in the material world, everyone is trying to imitate Krishna's form. So everyone is trying to look beautiful and maintain their form. So we see, you know, people this time, probably many people are running on the beach to try to maintain their form and to make it youthful. So in so many ways, people are trying to look youthful by applying so many creams or exercise or this and that. But the story of material life is we are subject to time, the influence of time. So time ruins everything. So we cannot maintain our beauty. And our problem is we are attracted by false beauty. So because we are attracted by the beauty of the material world, we cannot appreciate Krishna's beauty. So yes, the material world is beautiful. It is Krishna's energy. It is beautiful. But because we are enamored by that beauty, we cannot appreciate Krishna's beauty. And in the Shastra, it's the Shastras, they expose the nature of this world. So the Shastras, they expose the nature of this material world. So the Shastras tell us this material world is full of birth, death, old age and disease. And that here the beauty in this material world is temporary. And Prabhupada gives the example of in Science of Self-Realization, there's the story of the liquid beauty. So here in the material world, the beauty is relative. Whereas in the spiritual world, the beauty is absolute. Absolute meaning nothing is, it's independent. In the material world, one truth is dependent upon another truth. So here in the material world, the beauty is relative. And Prabhupada gives the example of liquid beauty. So there was this person who was very attracted to one woman, and he wanted to enjoy her association. So this woman thought, okay, I'll show this man my real beauty. So she took out of laxatives and purgatives, and she vomited and passed a lot. And she stored all the contents. And then this man, when he came to visit her, and he could not recognize her because her body was very deformed by taking all these laxatives and purgatives. And he said, "Where's that beautiful woman?" She said, "That's me." He said, "That can't be you, because just, you know, a few days ago you looked totally different." But she said, "That's me. And here is my beauty stored in all the pots." So in the material world, the beauty is relative. Something which is beautiful today will not be beautiful tomorrow, because it is subject to the influence of time. So we never get that freshness which we are seeking for, because we are by nature Satchit Ananda. We are seeking newer and newer pleasures, and we are seeking beauty. So in the material world, we never get that beauty. It is always slipping from our hands, and we can never be satisfied. So you can take anything in this material world, it will decay. Our nice car, it will decay. Our body will decay. Furniture, anything you take, it will decay by the influence of time, and it looks old after some time. So in the material world, a lot of maintenance is required to make it look good. But in the spiritual world, and Krishna's form is Nava Yavanamcha, it is ever youthful. So Krishna does not age. Krishna always stays youthful. His body does not age. Of course, man, it seems that Krishna is taking birth, but he doesn't take birth. So Krishna is there in his baby form, then he grows, and up till a certain point, after that, he doesn't age. So in the material world, everyone is imitating Krishna's beauty. And an example of that is Pondrika in the 10th canto. So Pondrika, he was imitating the beauty of the Lord. So he thought, I am Vishnu. And he put two arms on his body. So we all have two arms. He attached another two arms. And he dressed himself up like God Vishnu. And he said, I am Vishnu. He claimed that I am Vishnu. And he dressed, decorated himself with the symbols of the Lord. So with the conch, the chakra, the gada, and the conch, chakra, gada, and the padma. So he decorated himself with these symbols. And exactly he was dressed like Krishna, same bodily color. And he said, yeah, I am the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And then he sent a messenger to Dwarka. And then the messenger there said that, basically challenged the Lord. And when Ugrasen and Krishna and all the members in the palace, they heard that, they laughed for a considerable amount of time. So when they heard that, they all were laughing, ha ha ha, like that. They went on for a considerable amount of time. And then Krishna sent the messenger back and he challenged him. So there's a whole description over there. So in the material world, the point is everyone is imitating Krishna's beauty. So everyone wants to imitate Krishna's form, and everyone wants, the conditioned soul wants others to worship them. So we are meant to worship Krishna's form. So His Holiness Prahladananda Swami, he says that in the material world, everyone is, because the deity is Krishna, so in the material world, people take the deity to be themselves. So every morning, when we rise, we are supposed to offer prayers to the Lord, and then we supposed to offer aarti, and then undress the Lord, bathe the Lord, and then decorate the Lord, dress Him up, and offer bhoga and aarti, and then so on, sing for the pleasure of the Lord. So we do that for ourselves. So when people wake up, they might sing something in their own glorification or think like that, and then they'll bathe themselves, dress themselves with nice clothing, and then go about the day spreading their own glories. So like we do Sankirtan, to spread the glories of Krishna. So people, the conditioned soul, goes around spreading his own glories. So self-aggrandization. So we have the tongue, the function of the tongue is to vibrate. So people vibrate to spread their own glories. So when the conditioned soul speaks, it is to get attention. So the propensity to speak is to draw attention towards oneself. But in spiritual life, we speak to glorify Krishna. So our speaking is in relationship to glorifying Krishna. So that's the function of the tongue. So as Queen Kunti, she says that we have to be exhausted by high parentage, beauty, learning and wealth. So when we are exhausted by these things, we can begin to appreciate Krishna's beauty, and then we can take out Krishna's names, Hey Govinda, with feelings. Then we can call out Krishna's names with feelings. So in Kali Yuga, the prime means of advancement is the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalava Nasti, Eva Nasti, Eva Nasti, Eva Gatir Anyata. So in Kali Yuga, the prime means of advancement is by chanting the holy names of the Lord. There's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way. So there's a logical progression. There's the Naam, there's the Roop, there's the Guna and Leela. So there's the name, quality, name, form, quality and pastimes. So it all begins with the name. So we have to strive to chant the holy name devoid of the 10 offenses. So in Kali Yuga, the prime means of advancement is Naam Sankirtan. So Naam Sankirtan is the prime means of... So congregational chanting of the holy names of the Supreme Lord is the prime means of making advancement. And that's the life of all knowledge, as it says in the Shikshashtakam. This is the life of all transcendental knowledge. This Sankirtan movement is the life of all transcendental knowledge. So there is japa and there is kirtan. And it's interesting in the seven purposes of ISKCON, in the fourth or the fifth, is the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord. So once the preaching is established, the first purpose is to spread spiritual values, is to propagate spiritual values in order to bring peace and unity in society. And the second is to propagate propagate Krishna through the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And this temple worship. And then Prabhupada mentions congregational chanting of the holy name. So the purpose of all the temples, of all the preaching, is to bring people to the point of chanting the holy names of the Supreme Lord. And especially through Naam Sankirtan. So the books are there to convince people philosophically why they should chant the holy names of the Supreme Lord. So when... Otherwise people think this is sentiment. People think that's a mere sentiment. So that's why there are the books to convince people philosophically. So I remember when I would see the Harinam party some years ago when I was working. I remember Keshava and Sandini Shakti and other two devotees, I can't remember. But I would think this is very nice, very attractive, but I thought it's a sentiment. But when later I read the books, this makes sense, what they're doing. So, book distribution, everything is extremely important. So it convinces people philosophically to take up to chanting the holy names of the Supreme Lord through japa and then Naam Sankirtan for the benefit of all conditioned souls. As Supreme Lord says, Prithivite ache yatha nagaradi gram sarva prachara hoide mora naam. So Supreme Lord says that my holy name will be spread in every town and village. So for us it is in every town in Victoria. The name of the Lord has to be spread. So that is our job. So Prithivite Acha Yata Nagaradi Gram Sarva Prachara Hoide Mora Naam. So this name of the Supreme Lord in Kali Yuga, that's the prime means of advancement. And through the process of Sankirtan, it cleanses the heart and gives us prema bhakti. And the Supreme Lord himself, he exemplified that. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu engaged also in Naam Sankirtan. So he was the Supreme Lord. He defeated Prakashananda Saraswati Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, but he also engaged in chanting the holy names of the Lord for the benefit of the public. So I'll leave it there. Do you have any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhuji. Why do other religions not accept the form of the Lord? And what's the second part?
Even if it's given in the scriptures, like they say his father, which is established, but they don't go beyond that and say he has a form and it's got a name.
Actually, the Bible is establishes the form of the Lord. When we are talking, using the word father, father means a person, that's a form. But because of an impersonal conception and because their teachers or the priests, because they haven't received such knowledge and their teachings have become corrupted, so they are teaching their followers it's all impersonal. But actually, if we study closely, it is establishing the personal form of the Lord. And because the teachings have been misinterpreted, so that they are seeing it incorrectly. So even in the Quran, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a discussion with the Pathan on the Quran, so the Supreme Lord established the personal form of the Lord. He said, Quran, the conclusion is personal form, but you are taking it to be impersonal. So because they have lost that knowledge and they have misinterpreted the text. In bona fide scriptures, it does in an indirect way establish the form of the Lord. It's not very direct like the Srimad Bhagavatam. So even if we take Vedanta Sutra, that also establishes the personal form of the Lord, but it is in concise codes and it is like kind of indirect. But it is there. So one needs the help of a bona fide spiritual master to understand these books.
Yeah.
Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So, someone who is qualified, they will see the form of the Lord. But if someone has an impersonal conception and when they approach the scriptures like Vedanta Sutra or even Srimad Bhagavatam, they'll get because they're seen through that lens of impersonality. Even when they approach like Bhagavad Gita, you take Bhagavad Gita, Krishna clearly establishes that He has a form, you know, meditate on me, surrender unto me. But Bhagavad Gita has been so much misinterpreted. There's so many editions of Bhagavad Gita. So because they approach it with an impersonal point of view and they don't approach a bona fide teacher, so then they misinterpret it. Though it directly establishes the form of the Lord. And some books don't do so much directly. Anything else? Yes, Guru. Spoke about?
Sri Vatsa.
What is Sri Vatsa? So Sri Vatsa is the hair on the chest of the Lord. Yeah. Is that right? Yeah. And is that Lakshmi? Yes, Guru.
Thank you for the question. Guru, you had mentioned about the demons appreciating Krishna's beauty before they attack him. My question is, what is the reason that even after being attracted to Krishna, we also continue to sin or continue to offend him, even though we appreciate him somewhere, somehow?
That's because of we, meaning as devotees,
Yeah.
Okay. That's because of anarthas in the heart and because of material desires. So then we offend Krishna. And not being attentive in his service. So then we offend Krishna. So because we are still not pure devotees, we are in the process of sadhana, and we still have the impersonal conception in our mind. It's very strongly rooted. So that comes out quite a lot in our practice of devotional service. So then the service gets compromised, or we don't do it properly, and then we offend Krishna like that because of our impersonal conception and our anarthas. I understand. And some people are not attracted to Krishna. One could say these demons, they appreciated Krishna's beauty, but some people are revolted by Krishna's beauty. That's because of all the ignorance in their heart, the avidya and the severe envy. And then Rupa Goswami compares that to someone having jaundice. So if someone has jaundice, anything sweet they cannot appreciate. But the cure is to take sweet candy. So sometimes people cannot appreciate Krishna's beauty, Krishna's holy name. But the cure is for them to hear the holy name and take prasadam. Like that they gradually appreciate. And for those who can't appreciate, the beginning step is the, as mentioned in the previous chapter, the universal form of the Lord. So where they'll appreciate the imaginative conception of the form of the Lord in matter. As we heard yesterday, that's a bona fide imagination. So when they begin to appreciate God in nature, that's the first step. And the whole idea behind that, as we heard yesterday, is to acknowledge the proprietorship of the Supreme God. So when they understand universal form, that means to accept the proprietorship of the Lord and then not to abuse material nature. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.